Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. With me is Steve Chu, and we are going to geek out once again over Star Trek Picard, diving into the legal issues in the second episode, Maps and Legends. Steve, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. Always love talking about Star Trek.
Yeah, there's so much to discuss, and as we said before on the our first analysis. It's so nice to have Star Trek back weekly, and with Picard, it's like hanging out with Grandpa. It's such a good feeling. So, how many times did you watch Maps and Legends?
I think I'm up to six now.
Yeah, more than me. I've watched it twice, and really, really enjoy it. And there's some good issues here. And while we kind of break down chronologically what happens and then get into some of the bigger issues. So we start out with the Sin.
Wrong universe,
Yeah, wrong universe. And it's a Y, not an I. The synthetic uprising on Mars, where we meet, F8, who is one of the androids that lowers the defenses on Mars, turns the satellites around, kills people, then kills himself. And before doing that, there's his like eyes flash, which raises an issue of hacking or a signal being sent before the murder spree and all the 90,000 people are killed. Now, what jumped out to you legally about the scene?
So I thought it was an interesting choice and a bold choice, one that I really liked, for the show to immediately let us see the Mars attack, on Utopia Planitia, because we hear a lot about that, or we hear some about that in the first episode, and we know it's a major event. Like you said, it's sort of the it appears to be the 9/11, or the rough equivalent for Star Trek in that time. Because we also see it from the Trek short, Children of Mars. So we know this is a profound event on their time. And the main legal issue that jumped out at me at that point was how this all harkens all the way back to Measure of a Man, when Picard was defending Data and saying that Data was not property, he was an individual. And a lot of his justification was because he said, look, we're talking about slavery. And paralleling some of our own nations, our struggles with that, can people be considered property, or do they somehow have less rights than other people if we create some sort of working class slave class? And we hear a little bit about what happens in the first episode, but in the second episode, in the beginning, we actually see the synthetics. And it's very interesting. My personal take, and I'd love to hear what you think as well, Josh, but my personal take was the synthetics, they are treated like workers. I mean, we see that there are a group of, I think, eight of them just standing in some sort of cargo room, and the room opens up, and one of the workers says, "Good morning, my plastic people." And then they say, "Oh, good morning, sir." So it looks like they are kind of deactivated at some point and just kind of left to recharge or whatnot. But what struck me was how the synthetics were not really treated poorly, in my opinion. They weren't like maltreated, they weren't made fun of outright or attacked or harassed or belittled. Really, they were kind of more treated with some sense of awe or some sense of unease, because these are beings that, as they say, have tremendous strength, tremendous abilities, and you see the human workers trying to relate to them, trying to joke around with F8, and unsuccessfully. It kind of harkens back a little bit to when Data, when he created Lol and left her at the school, and she just kind of stood apart from the human children because they couldn't relate to her. It felt kind of similar to that. And it doesn't mean, my take was that the humans aren't mistreating the synthetics. They just can't really relate to them. I don't know. What were your thoughts on that, Josh?
Mixed. And I was thinking back to, you know, Measure of the Man with the issue of slavery. So that was a big warning label with making a worker class. And, you know, there are 19th century examples, you know, in addition to slavery, of, you know, how the Irish were treated or how the Chinese were treated in, like, building railroads and other, you know, jobs that were dangerous. And I don't know if they fell into that category. I mean, they, you know, there's an issue with they are not as sophisticated as data, and like, and so that's known. So they're almost childlike on one level, because, you know, they're not as like a fully fledged human being. Like, if data is the gold standard for trying to be human. So can you say that there's like an intentional discriminatory intent? I think with some of them, yeah, you know, that would be considered a hostile work environment. You know, the foreman referring to the group of them who were in their, you know, stasis area as plastic people. Was that a derogatory term or not? Is one thing. The way that the workers were interacting with F8, I think it was uncomfortable is a good way to describe it, because was there malice from some of them, or was it just we don't know how to interact because they're so different? It's a holiday, so there's a certain resentment to being, you know, at work on a holiday when there's less people there. You know, and the, you know, the F8 model, you know, is in this weird mix of it looks human but not all the way. You know, it's
right.
You know, it doesn't have hair. I don't think it has eyebrows.
Yeah.
So there's
like a mannequin, really.
Yeah. So it's not like an uncanny valley issue of it looks too human to the point it's fake type of thing. But it,
right.
You know, it's problematic. Because they, you know, they're not treated like data, because they're not, data was special.
Yes.
But I don't think they were intentionally mistreated, but I don't think they were fully integrated either. I mean, so yeah. there's a lot of issues that could go to like an equal protection type issue. Because theoretically, you know, the holograms that could be made like the Doctor from Voyager would be more human, not just in addition to appearance, but also in how they act. The personality types definitely are more human, that could act like a person. So on that scale of, is it alive? It's less than the Doctor or Data.
Yes.
But it's more than, you know, a tricorder.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we go with the definitions of life that Picard goes through during Measure of a Man, the androids probably meet all of the requirements. But I think that your analogy that they're kind of like children in a way, like awkward children. You know, you see the workers trying to relate to them and they just can't. You know, you're trying to joke around with them, trying to, hey, what did you do last night? Oh, nothing, you know. Yeah, there's just this sense of awkwardness, and I think it's because these, and you know, these synthetics or androids, whatever we want to call them, have not achieved the same level of you know, individuality that Data ever did. And, you know, Dr. Girardi says that late, you know, at some point too, that no one ever was able to duplicate Data again. You know, there's a couple of interesting points here though, and I think just the fact that we're talking about it in this way says something about the show. I think it's a credit to the show, because I've seen reactions from other people, other friends who've watched this as well. And people have had very different reactions. Some people have said, hey, those synthetics were really mistreated, were treated very poorly. I tend to have my reactions a little different. I think they were not treated too poorly. I think it was more just that, you know, the humans had trouble trying to find ways to relate to them. But I could also see how people would say, no, they were treated poorly because they were treated as sort of like them, or they creep us out. So there is this sort of otherness about them. I think that's a legitimate point of view. But the fact that we can have very different interpretations about this, these scenes, I think it's a credit to the show. Back to the Star Trek's theme, IDIC, infinite diversity, infinite combinations. One other thing I wanted to point out, the F8, is that some sort of acronym or whatever for fate, who knows, but it reminded me of the Matrix and the prequel to the Matrix, the Animatrix, where the one robot or the one AI that rebelled was named B166ER. And then if you write it down, it just says it basically bigger. They were trying to develop something bigger, better. And that was the android that that rebelled. And it's just a funny thing. You wonder if the writers are kind of just having a little bit of fun there, but who knows?
Yeah, I didn't catch that. And that's good, like license plate analysis of, it's like, it's like, who sent the signal?
Yeah.
And how will that play into the rest of the show? Because who wanted to destroy the rescue fleet? Who benefited from that?
Right.
And was it just one of the 14 races that balked at the idea
right.
of saving the Romulans, so therefore they sabotage the synthetics in order to destroy the rescue fleet? Or is it something else entirely?
Right.
Because that war criminal should be brought up on charges.
Sure.
But that's, call me old-fashioned. If hundreds of millions of people die because of something that you did, you need to be held accountable.
Yeah, 90,000, right? Isn't that what we're told in the first episode during the newscast?
Yeah, so 90,000 on Mars, and then there were 900 million Romulans.
Right.
So how many ended up getting saved and how many millions died?
Right.
Because I don't think Picard was a spectator. Did he do some other Dunkirk type motivation to at least save a few?
Sure.
And I hope we find out that, what happened.
I don't know. I think that when we see F8, it does look like he received some kind of transmission or some kind of override, something that throws him off, because he appears to be functioning quote unquote normally, but then as he walks into the room a second time, you see his eyes flash like he's computing something, and that's when he sort of goes on this suicide mission, essentially. So query what happened. Did someone send a signal, some override? Who sent it? Are we ever going to find that out? Hopefully we will. I've seen some fun speculation. Some people are saying, hey, Lore is back, people in the strings, who knows?
Yeah, I think it's more nefarious than Lore. It's either a Romulan influence who, for xenophobic reasons, didn't want the help from the Federation, or somebody within the Federation who wanted to let the Romulans die and also didn't like synthetics at the same time, so go for a double play there.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's disturbing because if you are going to make artificial life forms, why are you going to make them stronger, faster, and able to kill people?
and why not use Asimov's rules of robotics, right? But,
Yeah, it's like, why? Well, they might have had fail safes in there that got overwritten. So, all possible.
Yeah. And, that theory that you raise, I've seen this as well. Could it have been Romulan saboteurs that set off this attack on Mars? And, the answer is absolutely yes. And that would be a fascinating story point. But my gosh, my initial reaction to that would be these Romulans would be among the greatest traitors ever, because they're sabotaging efforts to save their own people. Like, they hate the Federation that much? Or is there some sort of, bigger picture thing here in play that we just don't see yet? I don't know.
There could have been their equivalent of client deniers. The sun won't go supernova. We'll be fine. We don't need a rescue fleet. And
right.
Kind of like those who purposely don't recycle.
Or like
the states that have taken the point of view of, you can never say climate change. I don't care if Miami's flooding. It's not because the environment. It's like,
right.
Okay, so you're deranged and ignoring reality. And is it something like that of crazy fundamentalist Romulans who were so committed to their belief that they were willing to kill millions of their fellow countrymen.
They'd rather be right than save their own people.
Yeah.
You may be onto something there, Josh, because in the time since our last podcast, the third issue of that countdown preview, prequel to Picard did drop. Spoiler alert here, but at the end of the third issue, we see the two Romulan Tal Shiar agents who are living with Picard, Jaban and Laris, Jaban the male, Laris the female. And there's a confrontation where Picard is on his ship, Laris and Jaban are with him, and the Tal Shiar ship uncloaks and is about to attack Picard's ship and take it over. And at that moment, Picard is wondering, could he trust Laris and Jaban? And, he doesn't know, but he's kind of going off his instincts. And it turns out that Jaban and Laris's mission at that point is to basically sabotage Picard's ship. And it's not the Enterprise. It's the Verity at that point. But they're supposed to sabotage his ship and turn it over to the Tal Shiar, because many in the Romulan Empire, including the Tal Shiar, don't believe that the supernova is real. They don't think it's going to happen. They think it's a Federation plot to try to bring the Romulan Empire to their knees. And then Jaban in that moment, again, spoiler alert here, but Jaban in that moment turns on the Tal Shiar, and he admits our mission was to just sabotage whatever Federation ships we could to deliver them to the Romulan Empire. However, in that time, I have had my eyes opened, and I originally could not believe that a human would go this far to save a sworn enemy. And I did not believe that the supernova was really going to happen, but my eyes are now open and I can see all this is true. And it's the Tal Shiar and the Romulan Empire that is wrong. And so he backs up Picard in that moment. And I think that's, the beginning of this powerful relationship that sees the two of them ultimately living with him, on Earth in his vineyard. So maybe
it's people will do things against their own interests based upon ideology that they just don't want to believe reality. So maybe that was at play, but I'm sure we'll find out. Let's talk about, we have a nice split between the chateau versus Daj's apartment. And we have a search of the apartment. And so Picard and, is it Laris? Our Irish Romulan.
The Irish Romulan, yes.
I do love her a lot.
Love her. She's great.
She's sassy. And, this podcast will not get an explicit warning. But yeah, the way she says cheeky fuckers, it was like, I love you.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, well, that's a new one in Star Trek.
Right.
I'm on board. and watching her and her husband's like relationship, like the way, we're going, and she hits him, and it's like, awesome.
Idiot, and fine, you take that one with you and you both die.
It's like, this is so cool. But beaming into a dead woman's apartment is still trespassing. And I don't know if the world fully recognizes that she's dead, if her existence has been scrubbed by, the nefarious plot at work. But there's still an issue of trespassing. They beam in. They use the illegal Romulan forensics, which that would make life so much easier for law enforcement if we had stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's the immiscibility would be fun to get into, but again, that would be fun, of explaining how it works. Learning that Romulans have a fear of AI and androids. It's like, you know what? All the Romulan computers that we saw over the decades of Star Trek all were pretty simple. You know, it's just, it was just computing power. We do have a nice Ghost in the Machine reference, and that was cute. And identical sisters, you know, do have the issue of facial recognition, you know, could get one and mistaken for the other.
Yeah, interesting.
I enjoy the mild trespassing issue, because it is trespassing. And then the issue of how the forensics would work. And I kept thinking of eDiscovery and computer forensics while they were searching her communication log, because that is eDiscovery.
That's, right.
You know, you get the data, you put it into a system so you can search it and look for it. There's not a lot that eDiscovery software that gets into image recognition, because it's mostly textual in base. So that was cute to see.
It is electronically stored information. Absolutely.
I could build a seminar around it. And you know, I would go hug Patrick Stewart and that actress for thanking them for that. And the writers. Love you all.
Right.
We go to the artifact, and it's interesting to hear the cube called the artifact.
You know, if I could just jump in for a quick moment. Mm-hmm. Interesting points on the legal points on the search of the apartment. We're assuming a couple of things here. You know, we're assuming, of course, is it a crime scene? It's not clear that it is, because the Romulans, and apparently it's the Zatvash, they're just so effective at doing what they do that there is no trace of, you know, the deaths that occurred there, the death of Dodge's boyfriend. And there's no police tape or, you know, 24th century equivalent of that. We're assuming that this is Dodge's apartment, that she's still on the lease, so it should be trespassing. It's not, you know, Picard doesn't have a right to get in. We don't see him asking for permission from the landlord or anyone else. So it does appear to fit the definition of trespassing. This Romulan technology that's near magical, able to reconstruct what happened, even dialogue, you know, that occurred prior to the death of Dodge's boyfriend. I mean, just imagine if we had those kind of forensic tools. Query if this would meet the definitions or the concerns of the rules of evidence. You know, reliability, you know, if you could still cross-examine it, you know, and therefore, you know, admissibility. But I don't know. You know, Picard said, well, these forensic tools which you were using are famously unreliable. And Laris replies, yeah, that's what we wanted you to think. So it looks like the Romulans may have a leg up on us, you know, in terms of forensic analysis. Yeah, but for her, I don't think that Picard is able to find any clues, you know, in that apartment room. And again, we may have some serious Fourth Amendment issues, because it's trespass. And do we have Fourth Amendment issues because Picard's no longer, he's not like police, he's not law enforcement, he's more like a private investigator at this point. So the Fourth Amendment may not apply.
You know? No state action. But
yeah.
The interesting questions of admissibility, I do think we could get around those. So I do think it could be admissible. Explaining how it works would be fun, but you know, it's just, I think we can demonstrate all the Daubert requirements to show, hey, this works, and get around that. It is fascinating, to coin a famous Vulcan. Let's go to you know, there's a little overlap here. So we get the Pello talk and learning that the Borg cube is called the artifact.
Right.
And, you know, we don't need to spend much time with the intimacy of a Romulan and android, but that's deep undercover work right there.
Sure.
we then find out that Picard is in good health from his doctor from the Stargazer, but apparently he does have something in his frontal lobe, which I don't know if that's the medical condition that we saw referenced in All Good Things, or if it's something else, or if it's related to the Borg experience that he had in Best of Both Worlds. But it raises a question, did the doctor falsify the medical report saying Picard was fit for service? And I don't know, because he is fit for service, so does it matter if he could have something terminal, in the future? It would really depend upon what the report required in order to know if anything was actually falsified.
Well, so I think that medical issues are fascinating, and they come up all the time in the cases which I handle. I think that the short answer is that based on the episode and the information that we get, it's pretty clear the doctor does falsify or certainly exaggerate the medical report to give Picard a quote-unquote clean bill of health, or to say that he does meet the requirements needed in order for him to travel through space. He mentions the doctor, and this is the first time we see this doctor, although he and Picard apparently have a long history on the Stargazer. Many fans, of course, are wondering, well, why didn't he call a certain beloved redheaded doctor, Dr. Beverly Crusher, or even, if she is still alive, Pulaski, who was referenced in the novelization of All Good Things, by the way. So, at least we know that in canon, she was still alive at that point. But the defect in the parietal lobe that is referenced here was referenced in All Good Things. Dr. Crusher at that point said it's the kind of thing that would only show up on a very, very intense scan. And it could eventually lead to a number of things, including aromatic syndrome. And this is back in All Good Things. And the doctor in this episode is saying something very similar, that, you still have that. The thing is, we have that defect in the parietal lobe, and it could lead to a number of things, all of which are bad. So it's very interesting that we're seeing Star Trek tackle a 24th century equivalent, because this aromatic syndrome is a made up syndrome, but this appears to be Star Trek's taking on of cognitive disorders or degenerative disorders like Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that. So, you have those really interesting just kind of health parallels. And even in the 24th century, apparently they've not been able to cure these kind of cognitive degenerative diseases. However, back to the original question, did the doctor falsify the record? I think the answer has to be yes. And the doctor is really putting his license on the line here, because if something were to happen to Picard, the reasoning goes here, if Picard were put in a command of a ship, and if he had some sort of episode where he just kind of blanked out or was not functional at a critical moment, as he tells Riker in All Good Things, I need you to take command if something like that happens. And that was a result of time shifting. But here, if as a result of the issue with his parietal lobe, he has some cognitive decline or an episode where he's just not competent, and it would therefore put the crew and the ship in danger. And so if something were to happen, and it could be traced back to the doctor, and the question would be, why did you clear this person who you knew was not competent? And that doctor would have a lot to answer for. So
I don't disagree. I also just wonder, is it an exaggeration? I think it's going to turn on what the report requires. Was this found in addition, and what is he withholding? Do we get into the issue of, is withholding something like that amount to a failure to disclose? And the answer is maybe. There's a good argument for yes. The doctor does make the comment about, if you're lucky, it will kill you. So that's highlighting the the effects of it could be really bad.
Yeah, if something came up and it were traced back to the doctor, that doctor would be answering to the 24th century equivalent of the medical boards and of the Federation. He could lose his license and he could lose his commission, and who knows, he could be brought up on court-martial. There could be a lot of things that could happen.
Well, if he's not in the service anymore, so not court-martial, but still.
Is he not in the service? Is that clear?
I got the sense he was not in the service anymore.
Okay, maybe.
It was private practice was my read. Yeah. Now, for the former doctors of the Enterprise, and they could still be alive. They could be on assignment. Crusher could be an admiral. You know, most of the next generation crew should be at minimum captains, but if not admirals in their own right. And or retired doing other things.
Right.
But I think there's a hesitancy for Picard to bring in those that he truly loves because he doesn't want them to get killed.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a mild martyr complex of Data died saving Picard's life. Therefore, he doesn't want anyone else to die. It's like, so you're going to close yourself off from those who can help you? That seems like a great way to, you know, go with a survivor's complex to get yourself killed, as opposed to there are Romulan death squads operating on Earth and I need your help to expose them. You think they would all rally? No, I'm the band's back together. We're ready to go.
Of course, I think every Star Trek, every Next Gen fan wants, you know, Picard to get the bridge crew back together. And I don't know that that will happen, but I think we'll at least see some more of the characters. So.
We see Riker and Troy, and
we've seen Data, sort of, you know.
Yeah, in a dream. Mm-hmm. So I have an idea about this dawned on me, the card game, and there were
the five queens.
Mm-hmm. What if Q is manipulating Picard's dreams?
I would love to see that. That would be outstanding.
Because, I mean, I'm all for, on one level, there's more meaning if it's a subconscious putting together the pieces, because it's just, he's a brilliant man, and, you know, the subconscious is coming through. On another level, that's a lot of subconscious analysis taking place.
Yeah.
So a friendly Q going, he needs to handle this. but not know directly it's me. So like that would.
Wow. If it were Q, then there would be even stronger parallels with All Good Things.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that jumped out at me, I didn't immediately think of Q when I saw the Five Queens. I thought of the episode where the Enterprise is caught in a time loop and they keep getting destroyed, and Data then starts programming a message to himself, and he keeps, if I recall correctly, getting is it the number 3?
Yeah, because 3 pips on the
3
collar.
Pips for Riker, you know, because he's the commander, and then that tells him, oh, okay, I need to listen to Riker's idea, not my own. That's what immediately jumped out to me, because you have, you know, when he's dealing the cards, everything is that number. So, you know, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe Data is subconsciously sending a message to Picard. But I like your theory a little bit more, though, because this is Picard's dream, and who can manipulate, you know, larger themes? You know, Q is the greatest troublemaker, so who knows?
Yeah, and with the way All Good Things ended, you know, it was Q took an active role that we also saw in Tapestry.
Yes. So, oh, I love that episode, yeah.
So if it is Q, you know, because, I mean, there have been other podcasts and commentators online who think that it could be more than one set of twins.
And, yes, yes.
Because, I mean, they going back to the home invasion issues could be seen there with, like, where are the others?
Yeah.
So, as opposed to where's your sister? So why say others if you're just looking for one other?
Or maybe we're going to start getting some Dodge lives, like hashtags or whatever, too. You know?
Yeah.
There's, like Ahsoka lives, you know.
Yeah, we don't exactly see her get blown up, so.
No, we don't.
But the Patrick Stewart might be 79, but Picard's supposed to be 92.
Yeah.
And sure, we do have a universe where people are living to 150.
Yes.
But because again, Dr. McCoy got way up there.
He did, as did apparently Admiral Archer, at least as referenced in the 2009 Star Trek movie when Scotty, played by Simon Pegg, mentioned something about Archer's dog. And remember the writers, Orchie and Kurtzman, I think it was Orchie, defended this online. And when someone said, wait, how could that be Admiral Archer? Orchie had said, well, he would be, what, 140 something, 150, which would be very reasonable to believe in the 23rd century. That someone could live that long.
That and Sulu also got up there and, you know, brought Chakotay into Starfleet Academy. So he was running around on the Excelsior for decades. So
yeah.
So anyway, he could still have like another six decades left in him. So, which is insane to think about. But let's go to visiting Admiral Kristen Clancy. And, you know, he asked to be reinstated and to get a ship. And if his rank was too high profile to be demoted to, you know, captain.
Sheer effing hubris, right?
Yeah. And I don't, if he hadn't gone on FNN, that could have had a completely different outcome.
Yeah.
If he had not been on the HoloNet the week before, could have had something different.
Maybe.
And maybe not go to, you know, if you are concerned with a mass conspiracy, I think he's an admiral. He's used to throwing weight around to get something done. And he's used to people being reasonable. But again, maybe go to one of your other friends who you know would not. It's like, can we do this undercover mission?
yeah.
You know, if there was a Captain Worf or a Captain LaForge or, you know, an Admiral Crusher, you know, could I need your help? Can we go check this out?
Right. Why doesn't he reach out to someone with whom he has a better relationship? Than the Starfleet Commander in Chief, Kristen Clancy, who with whom he says, you know, I know we haven't always seen eye to eye, and they clearly have not.
And it does raise interesting issues with, you know, 14 species willing to say, screw the Romulans, let them die.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think, just as
Kirk said, you know, in Star Trek VI.
Yeah, but again, there's a historical precedent for them. Hey, we made peace with the Klingons, or at least learned not to try to kill each other. And the Romulans did have a century of like non-engagement.
They did.
So I mean, that's a lot of hatred right there for wanting to let them die.
Yeah.
A lot to make of that.
Did it hit you at all, Josh, when I saw this scene? Something really kind of clicked in my mind, and I went back and I took a look at this. But Picard's plea to Kirsten Clancy, when he says, you know, that there is a piece of data out there, I now have reason to believe there's a piece of data out there, of Data who gave so much to Starfleet, I need a ship to go track this down, to find this, you know, out of loyalty to him and all that he did for Starfleet. It really harkened back to Admiral James T. Kirk asking Starfleet Commander Morrow in Star Trek III for the ship, the Enterprise, to go back to the planet Genesis, because he said, you know, Spock may have this immortal soul, and if so, then it's my responsibility as if it were my very own. And Morrow just says no, and, you know, Kirk then tells Sulu, Chekov, they say, what's the word, Admiral? The word is no. I am therefore going anyway. Isn't this a parallel? Because Picard is going anyways.
Kirk made it's part of the, you know, the ambiance of Kirk, of the cowboy diplomacy, and going like, you know, yes. I'm ignoring that order.
Right.
And I mean, this is similar but different, because this is Like we haven't seen Grandpa go on an adventure before. I'm like, so like there's like that, you know, there aren't a lot of 92-year-olds who cowboy up. So, but there are massive similarities of like, you know, Data was a Starfleet officer, he saved the day many times. You know, if there's a possibility that he has offspring or a part of himself still exists, yeah, let's go. It's our duty to go save him. And the mindset of the admiral of, you're a raging ass who went on.
Oh my gosh. The pitiable delusions of a once great man who's desperately trying to stay relevant. Like, oh my gosh, you know, just cut him to the heart there.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't agree with her. Because especially if, you know, if she's defending the company line of let millions of people die, that's an indefensible position. Yeah. On the flip side, it would have been better if he had stayed quiet and gone, I'm not going to trust the press.
Right.
Because he's too high profile that, yeah. You know, if it was a reporter he had a relationship with and trusted, that would have been different. Like, let's say if it had been a Jake Sisko.
Yes.
Who would be, you know, in the prime of his career at this point in time, like that would have made sense for him to appear and not be a schmuck. Because he would know better. He would just, like, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't go for the soundbite. He would go for the bigger story you know, like, I was a war correspondent in an occupied space station. You know, I saw some things that were horrible versus, you know, I've never known discomfort in my life.
Right. But a journalist with a little more integrity there, you know.
Yeah. So, but that's not, you know, I did read one article with, you know, this could have been a cheesy way to work in Janeway, but having Janeway play, you know, the role of Clancy and telling Picard to go home and die would have been a betrayal to Janeway's character.
Interesting. Which raises another good question, which is, if this were a different person, you know, as you alluded to in the beginning, could the answer have been different? You know, this kind of harkens back to some of our discussion in the first podcast that we did on Picard last week, where, you know, we talked about how there probably was this huge soul-searching debate within the Federation Council about should we help the Romulans, and, you know, Kirsten Clancy comes down on one side, Picard comes down on the other, and as we learn, there's dissension within the ranks. 14 member nations say no, or member planets say no. But, you know, what if Picard, you know, that drove a rift between certainly Clancy and Picard, but what if Picard had gone to someone, you know, with whom he had a better relationship, like a Janeway, you know, maybe even an Admiral Nechayev, you know, even though their relationship was frosty at times, you know, who else could have been high up? You know, in the novels, we get Jellicoe, you know, was promoted to Admiral at some point, you know, the one who took over the Enterprise during Chain of Command, played by Ronnie Cox. I would say Picard didn't have a very good relationship with him, but there certainly have to be other admirals with whom he has a strong relationship. You know, if we go with all good things, Riker, you know, was an admiral at one point. If he had gone to one of them and explained all this, you know, would they have given him a ship? Who knows?
Or if they took the position, okay, this is, we have some political issues with you, so we can't just do this outright. But I know a guy.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't hear from me. There's a ship sitting in this, you know, dry dock that no one notices, and, you know, I could casually assign you some trainee crew, maybe.
Yeah, like, it would have been a very different situation of, and, like, you know what, the story still could have worked, but then it would have just been, like, pure fan service.
Yeah, it would have been Star Trek 3, really, then, kind of, in some ways.
Some ways, yes, but some ways, no, because there would still be an air of legitimacy of,
yes,
you know, Catherine Janeway going, like, follow me, Jean-Luc, and, you know, here's... you know, here's Captain Skippy and he's going to take care of you.
Yeah, and, exactly.
You know, it's like he's off the books and takes care of some black ops for us. And like that, they want, I understand, going a different direction creatively to show that, you know, there's something nefarious within Starfleet because of Commodore O. So if their ranks work like the way Navy works is, pardon me, our Navy doesn't have Commodores anymore. They'd be like a rear admiral lower half. So it's like the lowest rank of admiral is what a Commodore would be. And so if they follow that model, so the admiral outranks the Commodore.
Right.
The Commodore is clearly in charge of security of some kind, whether it's like their version of the CIA or some other interstellar, I don't think it's Section 31, but something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that means that group is compromised because they either are working with the Jad Vash or have been replaced by them, because she does act very Vulcan. She doesn't act like emotional Romulan who's ticked off. She acts like a Vulcan, but who does hide her annoyance.
And, just brutally efficient.
So I do think she's a Vulcan and not a Romulan plant, but they could be working together, or there is something bad that happened. And again, given the common history of Romulans and Vulcans, maybe it dates back to before they separated.
Maybe that's when the Jad Vash was created. Who knows? But it's interesting leading to Commodore O. Right before we get there, I think what leads us there is Picard's conclusion of his conversation with Admiral Clancy, where, you know, now they're just kind of both standing up, yelling at each other. And then Picard says, you know, ignore me at your own risk. You're in peril, Admiral. And she's saying, peril? What peril? There's no peril. And he says, no, there is. You know, don't ignore me. And he clearly strikes a chord with her because, you know, once she gets past her anger, she thinks, well, this probably isn't anything, but maybe it could be. So let me call someone in security. And then we have the conversation with Commodore O. So as Picard says in his first episode, he has been known to be persuasive. You know?
And again, core values of Starfleet that, you know, she probably would think about it, okay, and probably pissed off and just like stewing.
Yep.
But even if somebody hits a nerve with something you don't like, you might still check it out.
Yeah.
And so she goes to the person in charge of security, not realizing that that's a compromised individual. So good job.
Yeah. You know, so what do you think, Josh, so far about the amount of cloak and dagger, you know, spy kind of, you know, Tom Clancy type of storylines that we're getting here in Star Trek?
That it makes sense with the Romulan connection, because that's happened a bunch. DS9 did it, I think, more than Next Gen. I mean, Next Gen hit it a few times, but Deep Space Nine really leaned into it, especially with the changelings.
Yeah, and Section 31.
Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying it. It's working for me, you know, and it's... I know, and it's a different type of Star Trek story.
Yeah.
Because, again, we have a guy in his 90s going on an adventure. Like, that's, you know, it goes against a lot of the pop culture stories of, you know, the 20-somethings who all, you know, have magnificent skills and ranks that are impossible for somebody their age to attain. And it's like, you know, the 22-year-old lawyer, really? That wouldn't happen.
No.
It just, that doesn't happen. You're not going to be a first year out of law school and sharing a murder trial. Like, that crap doesn't happen. It's going to be somebody with gray hair who knows what they're doing. And Picard does represent that. But we don't normally see somebody you know, advanced in age, like leading the charge. And that's kind of refreshing. So it's, and it's nice to see someone rally for what's right. You know, it's, I mean, you know, there are examples of this, like, you know, when we debated torture as a means of extracting information, I was seeing John McCain rally against that, you know, there, he had a level of credibility to talk about torture and why we shouldn't do it as a country that few others can. And, you know, seeing Picard being the, you know, the great hero that he is, you know, come back from the vineyard to say, like, okay, I'm fighting mad, you know, like, we can't leave people to die.
Right.
And, but he's also different. Now there's a couple interesting things. So we don't have the Romulan Star Empire anymore. There's the Romulan Free State.
The Free State, yeah.
Which seems to be in control of the artifact. So are they a republic now? What's going on there? So, like, the idea of working on the Borg cube, which has the sign of, you know, we've gone 5,000 plus days without an assimilation. Good for you. Working on a Borg cube would be high risk. And I do think there's a lot of assumption of risk that goes into that. But the idea of being an attorney, either for the Romulans or whoever they have the treaty agreements with, for people to come work on the cube, that's got to be one heck of a waiver. You could be assimilated. You know, like, here are the risks of assimilation. All of that's bad. I enjoy the fact that they are reclaiming the people who were assimilated. The discussion of this cube being a graveyard was interesting. And when they were performing surgery on the Borg that had been in stasis for 14 years, when they got all the Borg parts off of him, so she says, "You are now free," and I presume Romulan? I'm not sure which language. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, I think I would certainly not advise workers to go to this type of a workplace. Danger abounds. There could be all sorts of OSHA regulations that are being violated, OSHA violations left and right, the Occupational Safety and, you know, Hazard Act. So not the safest place to be. But the Romulans don't strike me as a people that care too much for the safety of their workers. You know, they probably just really want results. You know, there are some parallels with wartime experimentation and research here where there's just some dreadful things going on, but the Romulans could acquire valuable technology, so why not do it? I mean, we're assuming the Romulans are in control here because in the first episode it says Romulan reclamation site, and we do see a lot of Romulans kind of giving instructions. But there's a little confusion because at the end of in the Will Wheaton Ready Room, you know, where they kind of dissect each episode, they show a preview of next week's episode where they show again Soji, you know, saying "You are now free" to the drone, and that part is seen by none other than Hugh, who sees it, and then he goes and talks to Soji and says, "Wow, you know, you said goodbye in the creature's, in the person's own native language." So Hugh is around. So there are other freed Borg drones, and are they working with the Romulans then? You know, more questions abound. I don't know.
Fascinating. Yeah, are the Romulans doing a humanitarian mission? Is well, again, like, even the Soviets liberated concentration camps.
Yeah.
And it's not like they got anything from it. So what's going on here? Because liberating drones, are they trying to, like I'm thinking World War II comparisons. So, you know, there was a race by the Soviet Union and the United States to get German scientists because we wanted to get rockets and other military secrets that the German scientists had. Is it something like that with getting Borg drones and liberating them to go like, what information can we get from them? That could be one thing at play. Is this Romulan Free State just into this because they've had an awakening because of what happened to them? Is it purely altruistic? Because that would be wild for the Romulans to be doing that.
Probably not likely, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's got to be an ulterior motive. But for people like Sonji and others to get involved, like you have to be a believer in the cause to go into a high-risk workspace to liberate people. And like that's reminds me of liberating a death camp. Or POW camp of like the liberation of those who built the Death Railroad for Imperial Japan during World War II.
Right, right. Like,
and so, because when you think of like the horrors that people who were assimilated went to, I mean, like we don't have anything comparable, but we do have. Right. We can talk about being a POW or being in a concentration camp. And I think that's the only thing that could be analogous.
Right.
Because, you know, the other option is like, oh, look, here's a damaged Borg cube. It looks inactive. Let's put a bunch of nuclear weapons in it. Let's toss that puppy into a sun and not have to worry about it again. That would be a very normal reaction.
Well, yeah. Remember at the end of Best of Both Worlds, when Data and Beverly, they're saying, well, we seem to have the Borg beaten, but we should consider the benefits of further study. And Riker says, no, I don't think so. You know, we've got sort of a live grenade here. Let's just get out of here. And he was right, because the Borg cube self-destructed at that point. One thing to raise here, that sign that, I mean, I'm assuming it's accurate. You know, it says 5,000 some odd days since in assimilation, right? So that calculates out to over 13 years. So if we assume here that, they would say 5,000 some odd days, they didn't start keeping track until they actually started working in the Borg cube. So whatever project they're working on, this reclamation project, it has been going on for quite some time, over 13 years. What are they looking for? Have they already found what they're looking for? Are they just trying to gut all the technology? And if so, my goodness, they're taking quite a bit of time. I mean, the cube is huge, so I guess it's not unreasonable that they would be taking a lot of time here, but they clearly have been there for some time. And, I'm sure they've learned a lot of things already. Are they looking for more? I don't know.
There are questions within questions. For that, because the attack on Mars was 14 years ago per current Picard date, and the Romulan supernova was 10 years ago in the past because it was the 10-year anniversary. Right. So the events of Mars and the cube are close together in time, or at least boarding the cube close together in time. So the idea that the cube was damaged in the supernova seems to be incorrect, that it was some other time. Now just doing a quick Google search, so it looks that the Borg cube could have between 5,000 to 179,000 drones on it. So that's a lot of drones, a lot of people to liberate. And if they're doing like a couple a day, like it's still a long, long time. Yeah. And if they're in stasis somehow, how's that happening?
Right.
And there are chunks missing out of it. So how many were lost in that? But it's a minimum 5,000, and which is still a lot of people. If it's over 100,000, that's That's a lot of drones to go liberate. Then it raised the issue of, like, what's the purpose of this? Is this purposely humanitarian, or is it something else at play, or is it combined?
Yeah, hopefully we will learn more, you know, in the coming episodes. But the the characters are all there for different reasons. Soji appears to be there for some sort of research, but she seems to really care because she doesn't like it when they refer to the drones as nameless. You know, she's thinking, no, these were all people at some point, individuals at some point. And then we have the Romulan, spy who's there. Apparently, we think that he's looking for, for Soji and looking for the other artificial life forms. More on that hopefully later. We don't know what their ultimate goal is, but he appears to be working with the Zadvash or part of the Zadvash.
Yeah, and then his... I assume sister, but maybe it's the brother after a sex change, who, you know, is posing as a human female.
Right.
And, you know, if there, it'd be, he mentioned that he lost his brother about a year ago. So was his brother killed, or is the brother now a female human, you know, spy?
Right.
Because we've seen the surgeries to, you know, like, look like a Cardassian or whatever for the undercover work. Is this like the next spin on that too?
Sure.
Or is that working too much in things that we could say? That very interesting sibling dynamic. Now, just for the issue of for giggles, our CIA is not supposed to operate within the United States. So they're not, they're not supposed to do spy missions within the country. That's supposed to be the FBI doing that stuff. Not, or maybe DEA, you know, whoever has jurisdiction. But the CIA is not supposed to be operating in the United States. If Commodore O is having Starfleet special ops of some kind operating, is that violating their own laws to a degree? And what's up with collaborating with Romulans? So is that on the books legitimate, or is that like breaking their own laws? So I think we'll find out in time.
Yeah, we find out. I mean, it's a bit of a chilling scene just as a fan that you see that there's far more wrong with Starfleet than we had originally thought, and that this, you know, the bad apple or the bad seed goes all the way, you know, pretty high to the top. We've got a Commodore who may be the chief of security at Starfleet who is compromised and working with the Zadvash. How much is she working with them? We don't know, but there's clearly a conflict of interest here that the interests of Starfleet and the Zadvash do not appear to be compatible. So is she a traitor? You know, is this high crimes, misdemeanors, high treason, potentially? We need to learn more, but you know, it's certainly not good.
I think Dodge's boyfriend who was murdered would have a problem with it. And, yeah. you know, those who are sworn to protect us aren't supposed to murder our citizens. So just on that level, that's a problem. So, you know, Star Trek does play with different themes depending on the eras that you're in, whether it's Cold War or War on Terror. And I'm not sure how we're going to go with this, other than it seems to, you know, having death squads run around on Earth is problematic. Like, we don't want that happening. Even if it's an ally, like let's just say today that we find out the Mossad is running around bumping off US citizens. That's a problem. we have due process of law. We're not just going to let an ally come on in and murder US citizens, you know, even if they you know, are accused of a crime, they have rights, they get a trial. You know, we're not going to allow a foreign power to come in and murder people. No. So what's going on here?
Yeah, a lot of intrigue. I'll say it's wonderful to see Tamlin Tamita back. She was previously in the pilot movie to Babylon 5, and she's been in a number of things, including Karate Kid 2. I'm a big fan. I love seeing her back, and I really dislike her character, but that may be a testament just to her acting. For many good cloak and dagger type of spy intrigue stories, what makes a lot of them great is that the bad guys, they get a quote unquote bad guys kind of get away with it. And yes, maybe you catch some of the low level people, but you never fully expose, the conspirators all the way to the top. So if we go with that, I have serious doubts as to whether Commodore O will ever be exposed or captured or anything like that. Maybe some of her underlings will be, but it's going to be really tough to take her down. So I wonder if we'll see her again, because I also looked at IMDb after I watched the episode. Tamla Tomita was only listed for one episode of Picard. So I don't know if that means we won't be seeing her again. Maybe that'll be updated and we will see her again, but who knows? If this was her only appearance, then it was certainly memorable.
Oh, the way you just go look at secondary sources to get answers. I'm content waiting. And it's, did you shake Christmas presents when you were a little boy or not?
I didn't, but I did let my imagination run wild.
Yeah, we're gonna learn soon enough. But that's fascinating that what IMDb says, and maybe they are withholding that information until the episodes come out.
They may be, yeah, so it's not, I wouldn't say it's reliable.
Yeah, because it's just there's something about surprise, and so yeah, we're about to see what the new ship looks like and get into the search for Bruce Maddox and boldly go. So, but again, I am very happy to have Star Trek on weekly, and again, we've talked about this. Discovery did a good job of raising my blood pressure a lot of the time the first season, and Picard has just made me happy after each episode.
It's been terrific. Yeah.
Well, that and a friend of mine on Facebook posted, "It's just okay," and it's like, well, Star Trek's different than, say, Mandalorian. Mandalorian was action each episode.
Yes.
And to think back to Star Trek: The Motion Picture, it was very the un-Star Wars movie,
Yeah.
where the original Star Wars had, an action adventure, and the Star Trek: The Motion Picture had the goal of being thoughtful and a mystery. Granted, it needed more time in the editing room, so it would not have been, known as the motion sickness. But Discovery Season 2 did a good job of presenting a problem, not an enemy.
Yeah.
And this is different because we know something's wrong. We know that there are, nefarious forces at play. And they shouldn't get away with murder. So, because there's two bodies. Two people have been murdered, so we'll see what happens next. So,
The Zod-Bosh is a force with which to be reckoned. So we'll find out more, I hope.
we're not dealing with the mystery box story of we'll set up a mystery box without a plan. There's clearly a plan.
Yeah.
Whatever the secret is that would break someone's mind of why they don't use artificial beings. So with that, any other thoughts on Maps and Legends?
I love the very end too. When we see Dr. Girardi, and we see that she's going to be along for the ride, and Dodge was created just a few years ago, a perfect candidate for Daystrom, too perfect. And then we also see Rafi, right? You know, when he goes to talk to Michelle Hurd's character at the very end, she kicks him off. She's about to pull a gun on him. And he just says, Romulan assassins are operating on Earth. By the way, here's a bottle of wine. Okay, well, now they can be friends again.
Again, it highlights, I always bring a bottle of wine. I know that.
Right.
I did read that where they had her little compound was out where they filmed a lot of original series episodes.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
I mean, it's like that. That's got to be someplace in Southern California.
Yeah.
It raises an interesting question. Is it Bruce Maddox or whoever committed fraud and resume fraud by creating his twin daughters with complete academic backgrounds? Because it's fraud.
Yeah, and you know, she may have, in the wake of the college admission scandal, Dodge may have taken away a spot from another deserving student, through this manipulation. So, Daystrom has to be a competitive school,
I mean, it wasn't a side door in scholarship money, but that was one heck of a fraud.
It was all a fiction, yeah. Mm. Well, one other parting thought here, though, from a fan point of view, we get the reference from Jaban to other crew members. He says, you'll need a crew, Riker, Worf, LaForge. So we hear them by name. We know they're still alive, that they can help Picard. LaForge especially, I was worried that he might have bit the dust at the Utopia Planitia attack. But because it was first contact day, apparently he was not there. So at least he's safe. Notably absent from there. The only crew member who thus far is really unaccounted for is Dr. Crusher, Beverly Crusher, because we know we will see Troy with Riker. We know Data's already is still gone. So really we're left with Dr. Crusher of the original, group. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, again, I could see the reference to those three as being individuals who could be captains with ships. I mean, Crusher could fall into that category as well. But again, we'll find out. And how far did they get? Also, with the previews, it sounds like Riker and Troy have a relatively young son still, even though, I mean, it sounds like a teenager.
I think it's a daughter and named after Troy's deceased sister. The one who passed away, that we found out about later.
Okay.
But when I listened to it, when I watched the preview, I thought it was a boy as well. And then I went back and re-listened, and it could be a girl.
It's teenagers yelling.
Yeah, right. They all sound alike, right? As did we once upon a time.
The high-pitched dad yell. So,
dad.
And dad yelling back, what?
Stop yelling.
we have communicators.
What's yes. Right?
We'll find out if they're in Alaska, where Riker's from. So there's all kinds of good questions there. But is Riker still in the service? Or has he got a desk job now? Like what's going on? So again, I look forward to what we see in the coming weeks. So with that, everyone, thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for more. And until then, everyone, stay geeky, America.